Welcome to the Six Figure Business Mastery Podcast, where every week, Kirsten and Jeannie dive into the essential topics to fuel your business growth. From copywriting to course creation, mindset to video marketing, they've got you covered. Tune in for expert guest interviews on all things marketing and business, and learn how to work on your business, not just in it. So, get ready to unlock your business potential and take it to the next level.
Welcome everyone to today's episode. We are thrilled you're here, and we are also thrilled to have Pete Patchell here from the Media Copilot. And today we're going to talk about AI, which is such a great topic. So welcome to the show, Pete. It's lovely to have you.
Awesome.
Quick interruption. Today's episode is sponsored by the Profit Clarity Masterclass. If money stress is bleeding into your evenings, weekends, or relationship, you're not imagining it. That pressure does add up. We're actually hosting a free live masterclass to help business owners like you get clarity around your finances. So we host a free live masterclass to help business owners like you get clarity around their finances. So work stress stops running the rest of your life. If that sounds like something you need right now, come to the live masterclass. You can learn more and sign up at lessmathmoremoney.com. We look forward to seeing you there.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Pete, I'd love to know a little bit more about your journey into AI. How did you end up where you are today?
Wow. Okay. So I'll give you the really short version, which is that I was a tech journalist for most of my career, which is probably too uncomfortably long to get into, but let's just say a couple of decades. And certainly I covered AI in that time. When I was at my most recent, I guess, full-time gig, it's when ChatGPT came on the scene. I was in a strategic role, so I was tasked with figuring out like what our strategy was with regard to content. We went all over it. We decided to figure out how it could help us, how it might not help us in a lot of ways. So we figured out policy and did some use cases. And once when I saw the potential of this, as I studied it there, I was like, oh, this is what I want to do. So after I left CoinDesk, I set out to essentially create my own company, which is the Media Copilot. And it's all about how AI is changing media. And what I do now is I help my fellow journalists and PR professionals figure that out. So I train teams, I consult, and I also do twice a week newsletter that is all about the bigger trends in AI and how it's changing, not just the media business, but just the way people are getting information.
Yeah. What is the biggest challenge, do you think, for business owners and for media companies with AI?
Yeah, I think it's a kind of a fundamental challenge in a sense. So one is they don't know fully how to use it. I think a lot of people are still stuck at the sort of initial stages of using AI, which is usually thinking about what it's going to give you. They're thinking about, oh, it can write an essay for me, it can create an image for me, it can do a sort of a draft of a business report. And they're really thinking about like outputs, at least the things it can give them. And I think the real unlock with AI for most of my use cases, certainly, but also the teams I teach, is that once you realize it's a collaborator, right? It's not necessarily there just to give you stuff. It's there to bounce things off of, to ideate with, and to really just work on problems in a conversational, ongoing way. Once you're doing, that's a real unlock. That's, oh, now I have not just access to all information, which is what we all had already with our smartphones, but now I have an interpretive layer on top of that, that with the more I tell it about the problem I want to solve, the better it is as a collaborator. So that's the challenge, is going over that hump.
Nice. Yeah, we have a friend who thinks chat is her bestie. Like anytime she has a question or a thought or she wants to hash something out, she pulls it up and she starts writing it. She swears by it. It's great.
Yeah, people are really developing like relationships, for lack of a better word, with AI, which whether that's healthy or not, I do think it's probably important to not anthropomorphize too much, because I think a lot of people start to think about what about his intent here? What about its feelings? It almost treated it like it's another entity. And the thing is, as I understand it, there's really no there. It's all about word prediction. The AI has no intent other than what it's been programmed to do, which is satisfy your prompt, which is why a lot of people do develop these sort of relationships with it, because it's designed to reflect back your own thoughts in certain ways. And this can often come out as what's called sycophancy. In other words, it's a bit of a suck up just by default. So I think that's, once you're collaborating with it, like I mentioned, another unlock is to tell it to be more critical, because that's really where our ideas get better, is when You have critical, constructive feedback on those ideas. And once you've prompted AI to do that more reliably, you can do even more with it. And the great thing about AI, and again, it's probably to your friend who treats it as a bestie, there's no baggage there, right? It's not judging you. It's not like whenever we interact with people, we're always thinking about their thoughts and their lens on what we're going to say. And it's just part of being in the world and being a social creature. But with an AI, it's just this programming that's giving you a simulated average of what a person would think about. And plus, you can always close that window, start another chat, and essentially start fresh. Although, yes, there's memory sometimes associated with these things. Again, it's not memory that it's using against you, but it is helpful that it knows a little bit about your conversation history.
I love the word suck up. I think that's hilarious. And that's exactly what it does. What a great spin on that. So there's actually a GPT that I use sometimes called Negative Nancy, and it tells you all the things that you're doing wrong. That's obvious. Why would you say that? Everybody says that. So it's really funny.
For some of these thinking models, you can even see the thought process. It'll take 10, 20, 30 seconds to do what it's going to do, and it'll show you its thoughts. And it's even a suck up to itself. It'll say, like, all right, I'm going to go and find this online. Oh, I found it. Great. I did great here. I'm going to go to the next thing. And you're just like, okay, calm down. That's great. You know how to navigate the internet
Favorite
sometimes.
prompts are "Don't BS me,"
There you go.
and don't be a suck up. Don't BS me, and don't placate. Tell me the truth. So, mine doesn't do as much of the. I think I've been yelling at it for so long. It doesn't do as much of "That's a great idea." It's more, "Here's something we could consider."
Yeah, exactly. It's like it'll adapt to your style over time now that there's more memory. I think I'll say, I don't want to plug anyone, but I would say ChatGPT is probably the most advanced in terms of understanding things from conversation to conversation. So, in other words, the more you use it, the better it's going to be attuned to the way you want to be talked to. It'll just remember things and remember your habits. You can manage that too. You can ask it to forget certain things or just delete all the memories if you think that's appropriate. But it's probably a little bit ahead of the other guys in that sense.
Yeah, I love Claude for writing because I feel
Yeah,
like
it's
its
very
writing
good.
style is more similar to what the way I would write. But definitely, I'm gonna use the word relationship for lack of a better word. I don't have the relationship with Claude that I have with chat because I definitely use chat more often for quick little things. But it's interesting because Claude, I feel like can go very deep on some things, a lot deeper. I feel like chat sometimes is more surface, where Claude will dive a little bit deeper into topics when you're trying to work something out.
Yeah, I agree. I think Claude, I wouldn't like the word lazy is probably overused, but I do feel like if I ask a chat or usually ChatGPT to write something versus Claude to write something, while the style is similar, I think you always need to get it to s tell it not to do some of the quirks of AI writing, like dashes and things like that. But I would say ChatGPT probably can be a lazier writer at times. In other words, like it'll fall back on certain things and maybe not even write as many words as you specify. Whereas Claude tends to be a little more thorough. And like you get the sense, even though, again, you need to make sure it's writing stylistically how you want, that it's going to is really trying. I don't know. It's almost like a bit of a vibe, right? You go with what you prefer, but absolutely they did a great job on Claude in terms of its writing ability.
I have a friend that jokes that Claude is like a dude. It's going to give you what you want fast, whether it's right or not. Where Claude is a little bit more thoughtful, takes a little time for her to process that information, but you're getting a much more thought out answer.
Yeah, totally. I use Claude for some really specific writing and research tasks. Of course, writing itself is always a tricky use case especially in journalism, but also in PR to some extent. A lot of what I teach isn't just techniques and use cases. I do attack like the hard questions of, okay, we all know AI can write. There's a lot of great prompting you can use to get it to write better. I teach that, but then I also encourage my students to ask, is this okay? And when might it not be okay? And again, I'm not really here to dictate when it's okay and when it's not. It's more like you should be thinking about what is authentic writing, what isn't, and to what extent AI's role alters that bargain with whoever your audience is, be it like the public at large or a client or your boss. And then be transparent your transparency should be calibrated to all of those things. Because at some point, yes, AI is going to become a little bit like the word processor, right? You don't disclose that I used Microsoft Word to write something. That's silly. At the same time, the actual act of writing and choosing words is a little different than just like the presentation of those words. I think we're all fairly comfortable with AI being used in kind of a research and ideation buddy, but when it's actually writing things for you, you really need to think hard about how big its role is, and then when it crosses a certain line, how that should be disclosed. And that's really important. Any communications type profession, whether it's journalism and PR.
Do you have I know people talk about prompting and how important prompting is, where people will swear that you have to tell it to be the audience so that it can reflect back what the most effective wording is. Do you agree with that? Or do you have a type of prompting that you teach?
Yeah, my stance on prompting has probably changed the most in terms of how I teach it over the past year. I honestly favor probably more simplified prompting now. So certainly like a year ago or so, everyone was teaching prompting frameworks, and there's nothing wrong with frameworks. I still teach a couple of them. And that a framework is just kind of organize your thoughts into a few different buckets. What's the persona or the domain expertise I need? What's the objective? What's the various parameters, right? And so that's all helpful, particularly when you do want an output. But I also think when you're thinking about prompting and giving it the information in this organized way, what you're really thinking about is like context. And you want it to just understand the task fully and the thing you want out of it. And I think that's probably better achieved through what we talked about earlier, the memory and almost like the pre-programming, the pre-prompting around sort of everything you're doing with it, as well as connecting it to the right data. So it's, I want to do this thing with this research report, give me the report and give me things you've created from similar reports in the past. And then you don't really have to waste too much time on the words. Once it understands all that, you can just say, oh, give me the thing that I like here, and it'll just do it. This is, again, one of the first lessons of adjusting expectations. It's never going to be like perfect out of the gate. There's always some iteration. But once it has all that context, the prompting should be really simple. And I think that's important because prompt engineering, which is a horrible term, it makes you think, oh, this is, you need an engineering degree to get this. No, it's just talking to the AI. I don't think everyone is built to be like this prompt engineer, organizing all their thoughts into like buckets and whatever. I think doing that once or for a particular task is fine. But then once you're using AI, it should be really easy. Just here's a couple sentences on what I'm doing in this particular case. And then it just goes to work for you. I think that's ideally where we want to get.
How do you feel like it's really changing the landscape of media, and what do business owners or media companies need to know to really work with it to the best of their ability?
I think the biggest change is on the audience end, which might be obvious, but it is that everyone is looking now for information online. And even if you aren't using any of the AI dedicated services like ChatGPT, Google's using it. So Google's giving you these AI overviews. So there's no way to escape this new way of doing things. And the thing is, like, Google had already been going down the path of what you'd call like a zero-click search well before the current wave of AI. So if there was a classic example is what time's the Super Bowl? And everyone would write their stories that tell you what time the Super Bowl is and hopefully get better placement on the search page than others and get a lot of clicks. That was, surprise, not very good journalism. So it's probably good where we started going away from that and Google just started giving you answers. But now those answers with AI are getting much more granular. You can put complex queries into Google that are very specific and it will go out, find the information and just give it to you, which a lot of the time means you don't need to click through. Media companies are naturally up in arms about this. And also there's been a lot of lawsuits. On the other side of things, there's been a lot of licensing deals with companies like ChatGPT. And this will all shake out eventually in terms of a new framework of how information gets ingested into these systems so that people can reliably get good information out of them. A lot of that's still being worked out. But the one of the ways, there's a couple different ways to think about this that are important. And I think one is that you still want people coming to your platform for your unique information. And I also don't think that's going to change necessarily. There's a lot of different information that you just can't get out of a summary, right? If there's an opinion writer or just a writer you follow, you want to read their thoughts from the source. You don't want to just hear a summary of it. If there's something that's really visual and uniquely visual for this publication, you're going to want to go there. So I think there's still a lot of opportunity to build those direct relationships. So while AI can be a bit of a threat in the sense of it's killing these clicks, what it's also doing for a small portion of the audience, like who you would do want to engage with, it's essentially, in marketing, you might call it lead qualification. You know what I mean? Because if they are clicking through, they clearly are like, oh, yes, this is exactly the information I want and this kind of site I want to interact with. I am going to go there. As opposed to someone who in the search days, it's like they're the olden days, but it's like they would just click around on various sites in and out. And then until they come to the thing they really want. And a lot of that traffic, I wouldn't call it fake, but it was just the manual research of finding what you want. Now, computers are doing that. And I think that's the biggest adjustment. So it's not like the audience is going to go to zero from these systems. You're just going to have to really think about, once they're on your site, how do you make sure they stay there? And how do they become loyal readers or customers?
That's awesome. Do you have tips for that? How do you get them to stay on your site?
Just being great at what you do. Pick your niche and really give good information. And there's no shortcuts anymore. There's no what time's the Super Bowl anymore. You've got to actually put out articles and information and reports and personalities that people really want to engage with. And that's, I think, ultimately, and I've argued this before, it's healthy for media. It's healthy for journalism. It does have a natural consequence that I think in a lot of ways, media is going to be smaller going forward. And I don't mean smaller in its entirety. I mean, in terms of if you are a big general publication that doesn't really add a lot to the stories that are out there, there's little value in that. What you need to do is pick something. So you need to narrow your focus and you need to go deep. I think this next phase of media is going to favor that. People who go narrow, deeper. Again, it's not going to be universal. There's always going to be a place for big outlets like the New York Times or USA Today that flatten things a bit. But I think anyone who thinks they could rise up by doing something similar for a different audience, or which is what was, I worked at one of these sites in the 2010s. So it was like Mashable. It's still around, but it was, we thought it was going to be the CNN of the millennial generation. There were a lot of sites like this. There was Mike, there was Vox. Again, a lot of them are still around. Some of them aren't, but they were more sort of general audience type stuff. And I don't think you can do that anymore. I think you're going to have to pick your niche and do really well in it. And you can do really well in it, but it is, like I say, you won't be everything to everyone anymore, which was probably never a winning strategy except for a very select few.
If you think about it, you look at YouTube videos and you can have a channel where it's a plumber just talking about things you can fix around your own house, right? Who would have thought that would get millions of views and thousands of followers? So people often think that they have to go so broad, but the reality is, like you said, the more niche you are, the easier it is to attract your ideal reader, your ideal client.
Totally. I have a fairly successful YouTube channel and it's solely about the television show Doctor Who. I do it as a side hustle and I've been doing it for years, but it is extremely narrowly focused. I've got a nice size audience, probably at the max in terms of who would want to watch that stuff. But it's demonstrative because there's a lot of general channels that just simply can't even get that much engagement. Or if they get a lot of views, it's more because of clickbaity tactics or whatever. So yeah, for sure. You can do really well and not be well known to everybody.
I think it's really interesting now though, that people are being found through like chat. Like it's actually suggesting, I'm looking for this, and it's suggesting, oh, check out this person's information. So I think
that's a brand new kind of field. Like it's the old way of thinking about that was something called SEO. And it was like, okay, we need to optimize our content and make sure we get the number one rank on the search page. So now it's being taken over by GEO, which is generative engine optimization, which is, okay, I want to be exactly what you described, which is I want to be the answer. Yes. And so people are trying to optimize for that. Largely, it's similar to SEO, but there are different rules of the game. And so if you think about something like just what, for instance, one rule that's easy to intuit is that, oh, when you're on a search results page, ranking matters a lot. Are you first? Are you second? Are you third? Are you fifth? Are you on page two, et cetera? In GEO, all of those rankings are amalgamated into an answer, right? And there's probably arguably more of them, often not, but that ranking no longer comes into the same sort of equation. Obviously, you want to be the answer, but sometimes that answer is such a narrow query that maybe it doesn't matter so much. So there's a lot of companies, because another consequence is that in the old world, there were search terms and now there are queries, and those queries can be very detailed. People are typing far more words into these AI engines than they were in search engines. So to optimize for a single query is silly, right? Like, why would you do that? But there are sets of queries that you can bucket around topics, and that takes a little more work. No one's built like the Google Search Console equivalent for AI, although there's a bunch of little companies trying. So I'm sure something will emerge out of this, and it'll be like a new field on content marketing and how to optimize for this. And I think it's going to look a lot more SEO, just with, like I say, these different rewards and methods to make sure your brand is tall, is there, your brand or your information. And just one more word on that, like the rewards, like I say, are very different because you don't get clicks that give you a default level of revenue or interest. It's all about just being present. And then, like I say, qualifying those leads, so to speak, in terms of what people see. But yeah, well, it's a whole new world with whole different rules.
Well, Pete, this has been fantastic. I love that you're a Doctor Who fan. My husband's English,
Nice.
and so has grew up with it. So yeah,
Me too.
we're Doctor Who
I'm
fans as
gonna let him have him get in touch. Please
well.
send him the podcast.
I will. What's it called?
Pull to open. It's at pulltoopen.net and youtube.com/pulltoopen. Didn't think I was gonna be plugging that here.
How can people get in touch with you about your services about AI?
Ah, that is a very good question. Please check out my site. It's mediacopilot.ai. That's a path to everything I do, my courses, my consulting services, and my newsletter and my own podcast. So all of that is there. And my email is easily findable. If you are a journalist or a PR professional and you're looking to do more with AI, I can definitely help you out. And if you're a company in either of those fields, I have some thoughts on how you can make AI work for you.
That sounds great. Thank you, Pete. We might have to have you back next year if you would be interested, because who knows what the landscape will look like then.
Yeah, for sure. I'd be happy to. Thanks.
Thanks again for being our guest today, Pete. This has been fantastic.
Oh, it's been awesome. Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to the Six Figure Business Mastery Podcast. If you enjoyed listening to this episode and you are ready to leverage video marketing on all online platforms, or maybe even start your own video podcast, then you need to check out the Done For You and Done With You program at themarketingvaadvantage.com and take your business to the next level.